You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht, Benjamin Pieske, and Sam Gardner, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today we are talking about figures and how to show individual patients in these. So stay tuned, and now some music. Figures, data visualizations, graphs, we just need more of them. I'm very, very, very certain. And I've talked about figures quite often in this podcast. There's a couple of different episodes about data visualization. So if you want to learn more about it, just scroll back. Also, there's lots of stuff about data visualization on the homepage. So head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and check all the different resources we have. There's quite a lot. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. And there's also a really great data visualization SIG. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to psiweb.org and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician, and like last week, it is with Benjamin. Hi, Benjamin. How are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. Well, let's see if it was last week, because the agenda is usually changing in terms of...
Yeah, as we recorded, it's predicted to follow up on another discussion we have, but you're right. Sometimes these things are changing. We are just a short kind of behind-the-scenes thing. We usually record episodes at least a couple of weeks, when if not months in advance, to take the stress out of it. Yeah, we both didn't want to get into a mode where, oh, it's Monday, we need to record the episode so that it can go out tonight. Yeah, that would be really...
Yeah, but you're usually very good in working in advance, so there's quite a number here currently. I don't even know exactly, but I think this episode is, I mean, we today have still the last day of August for recording, but actually it's planned for November or something. So
it's even planned for mid-December.
Oh, so Christmas episode.
Yep. So individual patients, short story about it. In my years where I was working a lot on psychiatry studies, one of the things that we were always looking into was symptom reduction over time. Yeah, let's say you have a patient with schizophrenia and you measure his symptoms on some kind of questionnaire that captures all these different questions about, you know, the symptoms of patients with schizophrenia. And then you have some kind of baseline score, and you have takes a score at each visit, let's say 1, 2, 4, 6, and 8 weeks after start of treatment. And usually what people would show was averages, maybe with confidence intervals, or differences, group differences, things like this, or responders. Yeah, so how many patients had at least 25% reduction or 50% reduction or whatever, what was relevant for this endpoint. And I was always wondering, okay, the percent reduction really depends on the baseline value. Yeah. So if you have a score that, let's say, ranges from, you know, from 20 to 50, yeah, in your baseline characteristics, yeah, because you don't have anyone below that threshold because you want to have sick patients in your study, that you can actually treat and improve, then, you know, if you have a 10-point difference, yeah, is a 50% reduction on the lower end, and it's only a 20% reduction on the upper end. How can you kind of, you know, but the mean change, you know, is the same. So I was thinking, I need to get a little bit more grip on this. I was really, really dissatisfied with how we were commonly kind of displaying data because I couldn't really feel the data. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And so I was discussing about this for quite a long time with different colleagues. We looked into different ways how we can measure it. And one of the things that we very often were looking into were scatter plots, you know, where we had the baseline data as the horizontal axis and the follow-up data at the vertical axis. And then you can, you know, plot the follow-up data at week one, at week two, at week four, six, and eight versus the baseline data. And that was kind of nice. We got a little bit better feeling of it. At a, you know, later in my career, I actually used this similar approach with psoriasis data. And then we even more kind of made it more sophisticated and interpolated the individual patients. So these, instead of having scatter plots kind of, you know, for each follow-up visit, you would have one scatter plot of that visit and results versus the baseline. Yeah, week one versus baseline, week two versus baseline, week four versus baseline, and so on. You would have that like, you know, a continued series of scatter plots. Yeah, and we, you know, made them after each other. So it we got a little kind of comic movie, so to say. And when we had that, that was really the moment where you could see how the individual patients were performing. Because if you had these different scatter plots, you couldn't really see, okay, was that point moving from here to here, or is that a different patient? But because of this animation, yeah, of the interpolation, we were able to see how the individual patients were going down and up and so on. And that was really the first time I thought, now I really understand what's happening. And it was one of the big successes of my career. This example probably helped me with two or three promotions, actually. And we applied it. People outside of the company copied it. So other companies used similar things. And it was really, really, really interesting. And the background is really to show the individual patients. Showing individual patients is also something that is coming up again and again in the discussions of the Wonderful Wednesday. So the monthly webinar that the PSI Visualization Special Interest Group is running. I can highly recommend having a look there. And I think Zach Scrivenek is usually the person that, you know, comes up with, oh, if we would show individual patients, how would that look like? Yeah, it's really, really nice because you get a sense of the uncertainty. Yeah. Over time, the variation between patients, you get a much better kind of sense of it. You get a feeling of how much evidence is there. Yeah, because you directly see, oh, here we have 10 patients, here we have 1,000 patients. Yeah, you get physicians to connect much more with the data. Because physicians see individual patients. They don't see the average patient. Yeah. And so they see all kinds of different people, yeah, with low symptoms, low severity of symptoms, high severity of symptoms. They don't see usually the exact average patient. Yeah. And that really helps for them to connect more emotionally also with the data. You can see more kind of transparent what's going on. Yeah, it's sometimes people see statistics a little bit like a black box magic thing, you know, probably heard variation of, and then you do your stats magic sentence quite a lot in my career, because people don't really understand it. And when they see the individual patients, they can much better understand, this is why the mean is changing. Yeah. Or this is why, you know, there is not a statistical difference because the variation is so big. Yeah. You can also see more details like, are there certain clusters of patients? Yeah. So, for example, going back to the example with the animated scatter plot, we could see there were certain patients that were moving down and then up again. Yeah. So, most patients went, you know, down, but certain patients had only this initial drop, and then they, you know, decreased with the efficacy. That was interesting to have a look into. You can much better see, are there any extreme values or even outliers? Yeah. What is happening in this, let's say, upper quartile of the patients? The most severe patient, do they behave the same as all the other patients? Yeah. Or the very low patients, yeah, maybe, you know, you see that, well, most of the treatment effect you see in the more severe or the less severe patients. Yeah. You see much more of these details when you look into individual patients in your figures.
Yeah, I think, no, absolutely. I mean, I understand the point of saying it's the question is about the individual patient and not about the average. So that does definitely help. Just trying to imagine that, you know, if you have a phase three with 300 patients, how you would, you know, possibly do this. So I think we still have to kind of consider the whole setting for whatever you would like to present. Because, you know, even if you then, you know, if you have 300 points jumping up and down in an animated scatter plot, you might pick one or two, but that may give you just an idea, but it's still, you know, it's not then about the individual. So we have to dig into the data. And I fully understand, especially when you present the results to the medics. You know, if it's for a statistician, they can, you know, probably at first look better into the usual descriptive statistics with mean, you know, variances, et cetera, understand where this is coming from, especially when you see it all like in the longitudinal settings over time. But then the medics are, I mean, they can understand it. It's not that they don't understand like descriptive statistics. It's just that they are not reading it like this. So they're, as you said, they're, you know, it's about the patient. So if they find somebody interesting, they would like to see where's the patient going. And so that's extremely, I think the animation is a very good idea. I mean, we still, like, from, you know, being in the industry for 20 years, you know, we still kind of have our original mind is still on the 2D, you know, printout paper, a graphic, and it tells me, you know, this is what you can show. And then, you know, the printer quality isn't that good. That's why if you have 300 patients, it's just one big black, you know, blob of ink on this one. So it doesn't give you anything. But it's difficult to, especially when I now think about the CRO setting, because we don't, you know, when we plan an SEP and plan an analysis, that is, you know, we are not talking about animation. So we are talking about whatever you can put in figures and, you know, to describe this statistically and then have some idea or some, you know, plan behind it. So at the end, you know, when it goes to the FDA, it's, you know, it's not a question of the individual patient or 300 individuals. It's about the mean, it's about the confidence, the p-value whatsoever. So it's a discrete. But for, you know, really digging in the data and understanding what's behind and then planning in the future, you know, wherever we go with this, whatever we do with the how we present it, it's you know, then especially where you are working in, you know, in the later phases, yeah. where yeah. this is an enormous tool to use animation, so to use more than a printout paper.
Yeah. Really. So let's talk a little bit about a couple of different graph types where you can use that. And let's also see how, you know, some of the objections that Benjamin raised quite rightly can potentially be addressed there. Yeah. So one of the most common way probably of showing data is, you know, especially if you show continuous data over time or something like this, is a spaghetti plot. Yeah. That works well if you don't have too many patients. If you have a lot of patients, it can get very cluttered. But there's a trick you can use. If you are not interested so much in showing the individual patients, you can, for example, have two spaghetti plots, one for each treatment, if you have two treatments, yeah, and put the individual patients kind of as gray lines in the background, and the average treatment effect, yeah, as a dark line in the foreground. Yeah. That way you can see how the overall change is, as well as kind of what is the variation behind it. Yeah, are there any outliers and are there any kind of weird things going on? The downside to it is, of course, that you see how more the distribution within the groups is. It's not so well suited for comparing between groups there. Of course, you know, having both averages in the same graph is really nice. But it, you know, it serves a different purpose.
Yeah, and you can also, like, for this, you can also work with colors more than just having gray and like one. So if you have within a group, I don't know, gender or whatsoever, so kind of see, you know, make it a little bit colorful. So not heavy colorful, so not as, you know, not one color for each patient, but it's really about underlining some of the general questions so you get an idea.
Yeah, no, for sure, don't make a rainbow plot where you have 30 different colors. By the way, if you can make it interactive, it's really, really nice if you have these kind of hover over functions or things like this. So, or if you can select patients, where you highlight all the female patients, highlight all the pre-treated patients or things like that. So you can see kind of, are they more or less, you know, equally distributed across all patients, or is there some kind of, you know, directional effect? Yeah, you know, are all the pre-treated patients less severe patients or more severe patients or whatever? Yeah, so that's nice to have. A more simplified version of the spaghetti plot is a slope graph. Yeah, so basically it's just two vertical lines, yeah, and each patient just connects these lines in terms of before and after, yeah, things like that. And it's you can really very easily then see is a general increase in things or is a general decrease in things.
Yeah, and you can also see like outliers for, you know, the extremes, you can identify them quite quickly. Yeah.
One of the problems here is if you have, let's say, categorical data, let's say a CGI, yeah, with values 1 to 7, it gets a little bit more difficult. There, one of the things to have in mind is, for example, jitter the data, yeah. So that you can better identify the individual patients. Or sometimes, you know, doing things like maybe a Sankey chart is helpful. Yeah. Of course, the Sankey chart, if you have lots of kind of episodes in there, you can't see the individual patients anymore. Yeah. How they are flowing, but at least, yeah, for between each of these different, you can get a better understanding of that. Yeah. It goes in the same direction as, you know, if you have some kind of slope graph, and then you have the thickness of the line based on the number of patients in there.
Yeah, I think that's another point, really. I mean, we can talk about, we said colors already as one identifier, which is just easy to see and to identify as a, and the other one is really thickness. So, you know, bolds, not whatever it is, like a big circle, like a small point whatsoever. So kind of thickness of line is another very quick identifier of individual or grouped data within these plots.
Yeah. Another way to kind of show how things develop over time for individual patients are heat maps. Yeah. So where basically you have a matrix of where, you know, the individual rows are, let's say, the patients, and the different columns, let's say visits, for example, and then the color of the cells is determined by the severity of the symptoms. Sometimes that works quite nice. Yeah, you see this, for example, I've seen that in some COVID related graphs, yeah, where you see time on the kind of in terms of the what are the columns, and age groups are the rows. Yeah, so it starts with the top row, which are the kids and the teenagers and so on. Yeah, and then you can in terms the intensity is then by the incident rate, the incidence for a specific time. And that way you can see kind of whether the incidence first goes up, for example, in the elderly population and then goes to the younger population. Or maybe, you know, when there's a lot of vaccination of the more old patients is happening, yeah, that most of the incidence is actually in the younger population or in the kids. Yeah. So this is, you know, another way to show individual patients if you have each line or each row is basically one patient.
Yeah, just one comment on the table, because I think it's an excellent idea, and I've seen nice graphs actually in just quite, you know, a general newspaper, so where they use these kind of heat maps. The only advice I would like to give is use the right colors.
Yes.
Because it's, you know, even though you can say, well, whatever, you know, dark red isn't, you know, means something good, actually it doesn't. So if you read like a figure with dark red, this is alarm. This is like a bad, and that is something we should consider. So if you work with green and with red, this is kind of giving you like a good bad attitude to the whole figure, even though you don't want it or you may not want it. So that's why use yellow, blue, whatever, just think about the colors. So that's an important advice, really, to not use.
And think about maybe your audience is colorblind.
Yeah, that's true. So red,
especially,
green.
You know, we as men are highly affected. So take that into account. There's one graph actually that we very, very often use that shows individual patients. It's a Kaplan-Meier plot. Yeah. If you think of it, it's a little bit like each row is the individual patients, yeah, and then it's looked up over time. And here the sorting is really coming through. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's sorted by the time to response or the time to event or the time to censoring. Yeah. And so here you can see how really important the ordering of the patients is. Yeah, you get this nice survival curve when you have the Kaplan-Meier plot. And I think it's a really, really nice way to visualize this type of data.
I agree. And this is quite new. Yeah, it's a good point you bring it up, because you don't see this as individual patient data, like a usual Kaplan-Meier. I mean, it is obviously, but you don't name the patient, so you don't identify them unless you specifically do. But actually, that is,
And the same as, you know, you can also show cumulative distribution function. It's in the same way. And you can show, if you have a couple of different treatments, you can show kind of how these different cumulative distribution functions behave over time. Yeah, that's another way. Kind of related to this are these waterfall plots. Yeah, so where you basically have patients change over time. Yeah. And you sort the patients by how much they change. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So some may increase, some may decrease. And you start with the patient that has the biggest increase, and then sort to the patient with the biggest decrease. And that way you can directly see kind of how many patients had decrease of at least X. Yeah, or how many patients had a decrease overall, or are there patients that are, you know, that most of the patients are really decreasing, but there's a certain fraction of the patients that is increasing quite a lot. Yeah,
you can really put in like nice animation actually for this one as well. So if it's over time, and you like highlight in colors, let's say like different either pre-treatments or any subgroups, and then you just go with the animation over time, and you see how the weight of the waterfall plot is moving over time on the one side, and then how different colors are moving from one, rather from the left side to the right side, and so on. So waterfall plots and animations is a powerful tool for individual demonstrating individual course of the patient's decrease and increasing of the
over time. Do you know these race bar charts that have come on vogue quite a lot on the internet? So where you can, for example, see, let's say, I have one scene, the most favorite programming languages over time. Yeah. And then you see kind of, okay, it's ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or so. And you can see kind of how these, you know, how they switch in terms of the ranks. Yeah. Or, the most successful musicians in terms of sales, yeah? And then you see kind of how they changed over time in terms of the Beatles, and then the Rolling Stones, and then Elton John, and then Rihanna, and whoever, goes in there. It's kind of related to that. And it's an also another way to show individual data over time. I want to go into a couple of additional features that you can do. So we already talked about highlighting things, like the group means, like, you know, maybe specific patients or groups of patients, making it interactive. You know, this hover over effect is really, really nice, where maybe you can see then, okay, this individual patient, did he have any kind of AE? Or especially for AE data, if you show individual patients and their AE data or lab data, you know, here's the lab going up. Did that patient got any co-medication? Did he have any comorbidity? Did he have an adverse event? Which dose was he on? Yeah, all these kind of additional information you can then put into hover over information. And that, of course, makes it really, really nice to kind of walks through the data. Of course, it's, you know, time consuming to build it up. But depending on how often you can use it, for example, for example, AE data, maybe you need to use it for any phase one studies that you do. So maybe it makes sense to, you know, invest time once and then use it again and again and again.
Well, I mean, we can to the point maybe a little bit later. So maybe we should talk about like how to create it. So what software are you using? But let's first go with the additional features.
Yeah. The other thing is that we already mentioned is sorting is really crucial. Yeah. And if you can, sometimes it's really nice if you can also have interactive sorting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you want to sort by treatment group? Do you want to sort by baseline value? Do you want to sort by something other that is meaningful? Sort by something that is really meaningful. I've seen, you know, sorts where they just sorted by the patient number, which mostly nobody really cares about. Yeah. So make sure. The other thing is try to combine it with your mean statistics, your summary statistics that you're interested in. Yeah. So like we said with the spaghetti plot, include the average. Yeah. Or do you want to include the percentage? Yeah. So when we were talking about the cumulative distribution function, do you want to highlight within that kind of certain thresholds? Yeah. If you have a waterfall plot, do you want to highlight there certain areas in it? Yeah. You can always kind of think about this and align these different graphics where you show the data in a meaningful way. So for example, if you have a waterfall plot and it is horizontally aligned, then put the, and if you have several treatment groups, put them below each other, not next to each other, because then you can much easier see, okay, what is the, how are certain, you know, percentages changing? If you then directly see, okay, here 80% of the patients improved, here 70% of the patients improved, here 60% of the patients improved. Yeah. If you have that below each other, you can much easier kind of compare that, see these averages, whereas it's much more difficult to compare it if you have it next to each other.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You can see the weight, like how this is kind of shifting over from one side to the other, or at least moving in one direction if it's below each other, definitely.
Yeah. Another important feature to have in mind is unbalanced treatment groups. Yeah. So that was one of the bigger challenges actually with this animated scatter plot. Yeah. Because then you have, let's say, if you have a 2-to-1 ratio in terms of randomization, you have double the number of dots in one plot compared to the other. And that, you know, can look weird. I also had, you know, for heat maps where, you know, one heat map was triple the size of another heat map. I was thinking like, can we kind of correct for that somehow? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that you can more easily visually compare things. You have mentioned, you know, things can get very cluttered. Take care of that in terms of, you know, gray, hover, whatsoever. How big are these, you know, in a scatter plot? How big are the dots that you are showing? There's a lot of fine tuning needed. That's why, you know, having it 100% pre-specified is very often very difficult.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would have been there anyway already. So,
yeah. No. So there's another drawback to it. Usually these graphs are more complex. Yeah. So consider where you want to show them. It's probably not the right place if you have just 20 seconds to explain it. Yeah. Like if you're giving a presentation at a conference and your whole presentation is not longer than 7 minutes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if you give it to someone that, like a sales representative, that has maybe 5 minutes with a physician, Take it to those occasions where you actually have time.
Yeah, but it's well, actually, you see that this was a successful exercise with creating the plots if it doesn't actually take more time to understand it.
Yeah,
you know, but I mean, not. I mean, if you dig into individual data, it obviously takes time. But getting the grip on the, you know, on the data. So if you use the right colors, if you use the right settings. So if it's not too cluttered, if it's easy to read, and you know, but if it's difficult to understand, I mean, give it to your neighbor, to your colleague, and just, you know, get a sense of how quickly the person understands it. But the good thing about the figures and even the individual patients in the visualization is that you are using means of color, thickness, and whatsoever, so the different figure that makes people or the appearance much easier to assess.
Yeah,
right away, if it's good.
It, and that is another kind of thing. It of course takes more time. So doing a line graph of averages, straightforward. But here that takes more time. But I think very often it's worth the effort. Because what people see in the end of all the work, you know, the protocols, the SAP, the programming, the execution of the study, you know, all these kind of different things ultimately come down to some figures. Make them really stand out, you know. These studies cost hundreds of millions of euros sometimes, And then we have this rubbish Excel figure in the end that summarizes the key points. I say, couldn't you invest a little bit more time into this? You know, make sure that people understand it. And as we said in the beginning, patient values are really important. In the end, you know, all what we do is about individual patients. So connected to them. Okay, that was a pretty more technical episode where we talked about all kind of different advantages, disadvantages, challenges with showing individual patients. And we went through quite a lot of different examples of charts that you can use. If you want to learn more about how to actually do this, I strongly encourage you to go to the data visualization special interest group. There's a lot of examples for that on their homepage, and it comes with data and with code. So check it out there. Most of the code is actually done in R. So use it, adapt it, and try it out. Have fun with it.
Yeah, have fun.
Thanks so much. Stay tuned.
Bye.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background. And thank you for listening. Of course, this was an episode about data visualization, and it's a podcast. I know you can't see these things. So head over to theeffectivestatistician.com to check out the show notes, the links for this podcast episode. And then you will be able to see lots of different things that we talked about. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.